Welcome to the Coffee and Code podcast, where we bridge the gap between technology and people through each informative episode. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, technologist, two-time TEDx speaker, and CEO of Coffee and Consult. On this show, you'll hear exclusive interviews with experts, innovators, creatives, and business owners in the tech space and beyond. Whether you're a novice or a tech enthusiast, my goal is to excite, inform, and empower you to understand how the rapidly evolving world of technology impacts your daily life. Let's dive into today's episode. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Code. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee, and I'm so excited to be joined with a special guest today. She is a business owner. She is also a friend. She wears many hats in the community. She's a total badass, and we're going to get into a little bit of how she got into branding, how she got into graphic design, how she's leveraging technology in her business. But she is a friend and someone that I look up to, so I'm really excited for her to be on the show today. So welcome, Naoma Sernazan.
Hi, everybody.
I am stoked that you're finally here. I feel like it's kind of been a long time coming. For those of you that don't know, I met Naoma through an organization called American Marketing Association. There's an Oklahoma City chapter here locally, and it is a community of marketers. And Naoma, we really bridge that intersection of being a graphic designer, but also a brand strategist and also a great marketer and advertiser. So I love that you wear all of these hats. But before I dive into too many things, can you share a little bit more about yourself so the audience can get to know you a little bit better?
Sure. So hi, everyone. I am Naoma Sernazan. I own a boutique branding studio called Nuevo, where we really take branding a little bit deeper than most people think. I started that really just because I wanted to travel. and this was pre-pandemic, and vacation and hybrid work was not really to what it is now. So that's really one of the main reasons I started Nuevo Studio and have continued on. Now I'm a little too far in. But I'm originally from Mexico. I moved here for college. I'm half American, half Mexican, so I grew up bilingual, going back and forth. So I'm like bilingual, bicultural. And I moved to Oklahoma City for college, and my whole goal was to get my degree and then move to Europe. And then the second day of college, I met my now husband. So I think there were other plans for me that I didn't know.
Well, that's a love story for sure.
Yeah, Oki by choice now, I would say.
Yes. Well, so can you share a little bit about Nuevo? Because I love that you incorporate your lived experience and cultural heritage into the ethos of Nuevo. So for those that are not seeing your logo right now or your colors, can you describe a little bit and its origin?
Yeah. So when I decided to start a business. I actually had a business partner in the beginning, and we had a different name that failed, and that partnership was not successful. So I learned something really early on. And so I had to change the name, get a new logo, all within the span of a weekend.
Wow.
Which I highly do not recommend.
Yeah, that sounds really stressful.
So as I was thinking of what the name of this thing should be, I just knew I didn't want it to be something that was named after me, not like Naoma Sernazan or Serna Studio or whatever that is, because I wanted to build something that other people could rally behind. And it's a little bit harder to rally behind something that's like named after a person as opposed to like a thing, right? Or a different name. So one of the ethos that really came from me starting Nuevo was I was honestly just really tired of the design industry in Oklahoma City. I really thought it was pretty lackluster and not really a lot of great work was coming out of it. That has definitely changed now, but I definitely felt like we were not truly embracing our own culture and our own heritage here, but we were trying to kind of like try on other city or state coats to see if that was our ethos, because at that time Oklahoma City was growing rapidly. So I think we were even going through a bit of an identity crisis as a city and a state mm-hmm. that I think has now leveled out, but that was the idea behind it. So I kept thinking, what is it that I want to build? What is it that I'm excited about? And I was really just trying to build an agency that, you know, I wanted to work at. Mm-hmm. So when thinking of the name, I thought I wanted to pay homage to my culture, my Mexican culture. So I decided to do a Spanish name. Nuevo means new. Mm-hmm. And it was about the whole ethos of bringing something new to Oklahoma City, coming in with a little bit of a distinctive edge. And our logo is essentially two waves, which is the top of the Ña in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And really all about like bringing in a new wave of ideas, design to Oklahoma City. And then I made the logo hot pink, which is Rosa Mexicano, which is the unofficial color of Mexico. And in the beginning, it was very much where we would mainly work with women, and that was fine. Definitely 6 years in, that has changed, but it really serves as a red velvet rope of if people are really wanting to be different, really willing to try to push themselves to be bold, to be cutting edge, you need to be okay with hot pink. And so it kind of weeds out people that are not meant for us and mm-hmm. attracts people who want to be distinctive.
Absolutely. And that's so intentional. And I love that you have that backstory. And also, thank you for recommending all these great business books. Like, we talk about the Red Velvet Rope Policy, Book Yourself Solo by Michael Port. Fabulous book. And I see the growth that has happened and how much work that you've put into that intentionality, and it speaks with your clientele, especially when they have those aha moments and see how you make these intangibles tangible. And there's really there's a real emotional experience in that too, which I'm sure can be fulfilling, but also sometimes stressful on your end.
It's not really stressful, I would say. It's more of just, So when we work with clients, I like to explain it as I am not here to make something for my portfolio. I am not here to make something to win an award. I'm really here to make something that really represents you, that will attract the right clients that you're wanting to go after. And so it's all built on intentionality, concept, idea. It's not really based off of gut. So what's mm-hmm. really neat is that because of the process that we've built, I essentially get to hold up a mirror and I'm like, hey, is this you? And most people are like, oh my gosh, yes, I finally feel like everything that's been rattling in my brain has been put to paper and then put to a visual identity that really they can run with the wind and embrace.
And you're really good at that too, I must add, like you and your team, but I've been in that seat on the other side, and I feel like it is a really good reflection, and you're able to like help others bring out those specific words or just specific personas. You help people get to the hard work that needs to happen in order to successfully execute your brand strategy in the long term. So you really do set up for success in all aspects. But I love how you have incorporated your background. So can you talk about your like French literature influence and kind of like how that intersected with what you're currently doing now?
Yeah, so this is such a fun story. So when I moved to the US for college, I was gung-ho on graphic design. So mm-hmm. I joined the graphic design program at UCO, University of Central Oklahoma, and hated it. It was really art-based. I was drawing vases. I was drawing crumpled paper. That's for real, because they wanted you to figure out how to draw shadows. And after a year, I was just like, this is not for me. I am not an artist. I don't want to be doing this. I think the best thing that those classes gave me was that that's where I met my husband. But I jumped around. I was like, okay, graphic design is not for me. I'm 18, you know, you don't really know even what is totally available to you as a career. So I jumped over to photography. Didn't really love it either. I thought I was like paying money for myself to teach myself to do that. And I was like, well, why am I paying money? So then I went and studied my third passion, which was French literature and culture. And I know that that's kind of random, but because I grew up in Mexico, when I was 10, I had to take the TOEFL exam, which is the exam to test your proficiency of English. And when you got a certain level, you had to either go into French or German. And I obviously had passed that level because my mother is American. So I grew up speaking English and Spanish as a child. And so I was thrown into French. And so I started learning French when I was 11.
Amazing.
And kind of continued it on through most of my teenage years. It came pretty easy to me. I was in love with anything France and Paris, and my whole goal was to get to Paris, and that was really what I was striving for the first few years of college. So I went and studied French literature and culture. I did a study tour through most of Western Europe, and then I went back a year later, and I went and lived in France for a year to finish my degree. And when I was there is when I really realized that I love that you could communicate without needing to use language through visuals. Just walking around the Champs-Élysées and watching and seeing all the ad campaigns and the billboards and how things made you feel and that emotion. I love that you could do that through graphic design. And like I said, this was my fourth year in college, and I was wrapping up my degree. Like, I was pretty much done, and I had been applying for my master's and was pretty set on going to NYU to study French phonetics and becoming a professor. That was the track I was on. And when I went and lived in France, I was like, what am I doing? I really want to do this communication thing. So when I came back after that year abroad of traveling and meeting people and immersing myself in culture, I just knew that I had to go back to school. And so, much to my family's detriment, and they were really questioning me as to why I had just finished a degree and was starting a brand new one, and it was not a master's.
Why not?
I went back to the University of Central Oklahoma. And I tried graphic design again, and the program had drastically changed from when I first started 5 years prior. So it was very much conceptual based, idea based. Why are we doing this? What is the solution we're trying to solve visually? And that was what I had really been looking for in that beginning when I first had looked for it. And so I thought, you know, maybe I can just do a minor in graphic design and not have to do the whole 4 year thing, and I can get a job. And that wasn't in the cards because I was horrible. I was a horrible designer. I really was for 4 years. It wasn't until the last year of my design degree, my fifth year, that things really started to click for me. And I had to fill that gap of suck. I mean, that's what I had to do. But so I knew that that's what I needed to do and put in the time. And I was one of the very few that was graduating that actually had a job lined up by the time I graduated. So I then went on to work with a really proficient designer here in Oklahoma City. And now he's moved on to be a nationally known artist that does airport floors. And I learned a lot from him. And that's how we're here.
I love that you hit the ground running, but you had such clarity. That takes a lot of, I would say, clarity to commit to something that's such a time investment, like going back and doing another degree, but also having the foresight to know that that experience really counts and matters. And I love whenever we go travel and you tell me like, oh yeah, I remember doing that icon. I remember doing like contributing to that. That's so cool to have that like lasting legacy in these spaces that we see visually, especially, you know, having such a tie to Oklahoma City. Now, I'm sure you saw such a drastic change from the first time to the second time, especially when it comes to leveraging technology in design. And something that I feel like you've done really well is leveraging technology in your processes, not just in the artistry, but to helping you grow and scale and be able to succeed in this 21st century business landscape. It's really amazing. And I would love for you to kind of speak to your thoughts on AI in the graphic design community, because it's definitely a hot topic, as we all know. And yeah, I'll leave it there.
Yeah. So I chose an industry that changes all the time. Like mm-hmm. graphic design is consistently evolving. There's a consistent new trend. So if you're really not staying on top of it, you will become obsolete in my industry. So there's really no really way around it. You need to embrace it. With that being said, I know that there's a lot of, hot takes on AI in the design industry and people being scared of their jobs being taken away by AI. But here's the thing, AI is here and there's nothing, like, we can't put that genie back in the bottle. So it's kind of like when the internet came about and you're saying, we're not going to do that. We're not going to be on the internet. Well, I mean, okay.
Here we are.
Yeah, it's the new technology revolution and you need to get on it. Now, I think that there's ways to do that that are ethical, but I'm not a politician, so I can't get into that. But as a small business owner, I have a team of four, right? Mm-hmm. I have a team of four and we produce the amount of work that an agency of 10 to 15 produces. And we really do that because we leverage technology and we have such clear and defined systems. That's really the only way that we can do that. That way I'm not spending my creative time looking for something or figuring out what I need to do. I already know what I need to be doing every single day. So all of my creative energy can really go to my client's work, which is, you know, what they pay me for. So I'm not wasting time on these kind of things that really you don't need to be wasting your time on. You need to know where all your files are. You need to know what your process is for each thing that you do. You need to know where you are at with every project. And just from somebody who's also a creative director and a business owner, those are two different minds. And so I really need technology to help me make sure that my creative brain doesn't let things like fall through the cracks. So because if not, I mean, I'm notorious. I will not answer an email for 7 days, but I can make you a banging logo.
Totally.
So really just understanding what your weaknesses are and what your strengths are, and then figuring out what you need to like help your weakness so you can be spending more time in your strengths area. With that being said, though, we at Noah Studio, we do leverage AI. I'm not scared of it, mainly because I see AI as a collaborator. It is not something that's going to do my job for me. It's really only going to do, like we hear all the time, trash in, trash out. So if you're using it as a collaborator, as an ideator, as something to help you streamline your processes, something that's taking away all the minutia out of your process, out of your daily routines, so that then you can really do the higher thinking. That's where AI is wonderful. Now my fear with AI, now to like be devil's advocate, is that just from somebody who works with a lot of student designers, I was also an instructor at University of Central Oklahoma in the design program, and like I said, filling in that suck gap, right? So when you are a creative, you see what good stuff is and you can't make it. It's really hard for you to see it and then be able to make it. So the only way for you to really get good is by making a lot of things, like a lot of things, laying out a lot of flyers, laying out kind of the really boring side of design. is how you get really good at understanding what hierarchy is, how people read things, why things are important, how things are legible. Those things are design. Those are decisions. Those are, you are instructing the reader how to interact with this piece. Mm-hmm. And you only get good at that by making the sucky work. And my fear is that soon AI will be able to do all of that sucky work. So it'll take you longer to get really good because you're not doing it yourself. You're not learning that process. That would be my main fear with it. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything that has replaced that quite yet, but I could see that happening very soon of being able to do that more mundane design work. So what I fear for are the designers who are just production artists and are not high-level design thinkers. Mm-hmm. That's where it gets a little scary, probably, for our industry. Mm-hmm. But if you are an idea person, if you are a problem solver, if people are coming to you for your expertise and your ideas, then using AI as a collaborator is really the way for you to do more of what you do really good.
Absolutely. And you've mastered both the digital organization processes part and the leveraging automation to grow and scale, like you've mentioned. And you were like the first person that I heard and also saw doing a really good job with your digital file organization. You were like, oh, I can find any client file in like 3 minutes or less. And that was like a mind-blowing thing. And I think a lot of people struggle to even get to a point where they can find it in 5 minutes, let alone three. So I applaud you for doing that. But what I want people to take away from that is that it's not about the tool, it's about the process that you built. Because the process, you can adapt it to any kind of tool or any kind of flavor. And I think that's where people should start whenever they're trying to figure out how to make that first step.
Yeah, one thing that I see this happen a lot is people are like, oh, I am going to use this tool to help myself get organized or whatever. I see this in the creative space all the time. I'm now going to use Notion. I'm now going to use ClickUp, whatever. I use ClickUp. I love it. It's fine.
You inspire me to use it too.
But the thing is like, if you don't know your own process, like you don't know what happens after you call a client, you don't know what then has to happen for you to make the logo, then you don't know what happens. You need to lay all of that out to then find the technology that works for you to then be able to not have to do that process every single time you have a new project. Can you imagine? I mean, we did that for like probably a month, and then I was like, we need to find a better way to do this. This is too much time to onboard a client. And onboarding a client should not take a week. No. For us at Nova Studio, to onboard a client, it takes literally 2 hours, and that's it.
Wow. That's amazing. That's efficiency.
That's why saving time. We can produce the work of like a team of 10, and we're a team of 4.
And it's solid work too. I mean, you've done some really incredible projects, and I would love for everyone to be able to go to your website to see those. But what are some of the projects that you've worked on recently that you're particularly proud of?
Oh man, that is a great question. Particularly proud of. I have to like go through like my list of what has happened. We recently rebranded Visit Edmond and tourism department, and that was actually really fun. Mm-hmm. And it was a brand that had not been touched in 30 years.
Wow.
And they had really no strategy. We were really trying to, and it's also a, you know, it's a smaller town. So how do we really make that feel authentic too, because we don't want to make it feel like you're coming to Las Vegas and then you get there and you're like, this is not Las Vegas. So it's all about, you know, finding that balance of what you're creating and then what the expectation is going to be of the end user, right? So, you know, I can't make something feel super, super flashy and then they get there and they're like, this is not what was sold to me, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a certain alignment that needs to happen. And one thing is that like that client, Jennifer, was like so great to work with, great collaborator. And she also understood that. She's like, we are Edmond, Oklahoma, and we can't, like, I can't make promises that we cannot keep. And that's actually so refreshing, because so many clients think like, I am the best of the best. And I'm like, I mean, you're You're probably not, though. So, like, yeah. What is the thing that makes you better, and how do we leverage that? Mm-hmm. Because also just saying I'm the best of the best of the best, I mean, that says really nothing to me.
Super subjective.
Yeah. So I think that was a really fun one. I'm trying to think through. We just did a brand for a VC venture capital conference.
That's so cool.
And that was wild. And we went to it. We got to go hang out with our client. And it was just a whole other world. And that's one of the things that I love about branding and design is I can pop in and be in tourism. And then, like, the next day I'm in venture capital. And then the next day I'm in startup ecosystems, and then the next day I'm in CPA world, and then the next day I'm in a wealth management firm. And my curiosity, I don't have time to really get bored, which is really great for me, because I'm definitely the 10 clicks into Wikipedia is where it starts to get really fun for me. So this is a great career for me to have fun with my curiosity.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I love that you actually, all your processes are informed by something that has like logic and evidence of being used and being effective. And I think that it's so important, you know, as a business owner, as someone in the industry, to stay on top of all of the technology trends, all of the design trends. The world is constantly changing every single day. It's hard to keep up. So I'm curious, how do you keep up with the latest trends? What are your favorite newsletters or places that you go to on the internet to feel like, okay, I feel like I'm up to speed on this?
Man, I actually don't have a newsletter I know that there are some, but the thing is like, because our industry does move so fast, like there could be something new every day, and then it gets overwhelming, because not only do I need to stay on top of my own industry, I also need to stay on top of my business. And that's like two different, like I said, two different sides of the brain. So really when I see things kind of repeated a lot, that's when I'm like, okay, let me look into this. Like a lot of people are starting to talk about this. Like right now the big hit is like Firefly with Adobe. And then I was like, okay, I've seen three people post about this now on LinkedIn. I'm going to go check it out. And what I love about these things that change so fast in our industry with design and technology is that this is a chance for us to play at Novo Studio. This is not something that I'm going to go into Firefly and make something for a client. This is let me go in there and bop around for 30 minutes and just make something to make something. And then I'm going to go back and do client work or do whatever, just so that I can see what this thing does. How does it function? Could we see this using it for a client, for a campaign later on? But we don't let technology be the driver of the idea. The idea is the driver and technology is the pedal.
Yes, I want to pull that for a social clip, because that's on the nose. That's very true. And I like that you're able to just cut right through that and see, because some people don't, and some people don't see the aspect. But you're right, it's a collaborative tool, and it's about the intent of how you're using it effectively as a creative collaborator. But also, you are really good with prompt engineering as well, I will say. And I think some people have that disconnect of like, they don't know how to articulate what it is they're asking for, but you do a really good job encapsulating those very specifics. And you set your clients up for success for doing that themselves, because you reach clarity into their business in so many ways. I felt so cool whenever you helped me with my brand strategy. It felt like walking out with like the best Christmas present ever, because it is clear, it is concise, and I feel like it's an accurate representation of what I've been trying to communicate. But I've been so in the weeds of starting a new business that I didn't know how to do it. So I applaud you for creating and curating such a fun process that's both exciting to observe and be a part of.
Thank you. But I will say, it's not just new business. Like, it's not, you're not struggling with that because you are a new business. Every business owner struggles with that clarity because they are inside their own jar. They don't know what their secret sauce is, and they don't know what the true value usually that they provide for the client is, because they think, oh, it's this. And I'm like, no, actually, what the client is really coming to you for is this and this. And you're not talking about these things because you're too in your own world. And this is how you talk about it in your own field, but your clients are not in your field. And people forget that a lot. I will say, if you only are using ChatGPT with a single prompt and then you just copy paste what it puts out, I mean, we can all tell now when posts are written with only ChatGPT and there was like no thought put into it.
Totally.
And it's only gonna, you know, get worse, in my opinion, with how much people are now starting to get in their content creation and building out their personal brands and all that. But in reality, when you're using ChatGPT for whatever, you really need to think about, what is the end goal? Like, what are we really trying to do? Because if it's just to write stuff to make it fluffy, I mean, yeah, it can do that all day long. But like when you and I went through that brand strategy process for you, right? I mean, you could have gone to ChatGPT and not used me at all, right? And say, okay, ChatGPT, I need you to write me my brand platform. Let's go. You would have not got the same results as if you hadn't gone through my process with me because it has to get messy before it gets pretty, right?
Yes.
So, and it only gets messy because everything is living in your brain. ChatGPT is not in your brain, at least not yet.
Keyword
to get that information or really understand the nuisance, right? So I don't know. I really use ChatGPT as a collaborator and as an editor. I don't use it as do this for me. I use it as, hey, English is my second language and I need to make sure that the grammar is correct and I need to make sure that this has the right flow. And I need to make sure that we're covering these points and that we're not just using fluffy words because this sounds really good.
Yeah, those are very practical applications too. And I'm curious, you know, you are really good with consistency and you do a weekly newsletter that I think has a lot of value. But one of your recent newsletters that you published was focusing on burnout. And I'm curious, How do you resonate with making sure that you don't get burnt out? And what is your advice for other people for not getting burnt out in the industry? Man,
I think that newsletter went out today, actually.
Yeah.
I don't think I've mastered how to, when I know I'm getting close to burnout. I don't think I've mastered knowing that because being a business owner makes you confront all sorts of trauma that you didn't even know you had. Even if you knew you had trauma, there's even more than you could imagine.
Well said.
So I think one of my traumas is that if I'm not busy, I'm not doing anything worthwhile. And so I've had to teach myself as an adult that like it's okay to literally do nothing. That's okay. Mm-hmm. And I still have to tell myself that when I'm starting to feel guilty, like when I'm sitting on the couch on Saturday mornings, I start to feel guilty. I feel like I need to get up and go do stuff. And my husband, Harrison, he's like, it's okay for you to just chill. I'm like, no, but we have all, and he's like, I think you need to just chill. Like, so I would not come to be as the master of figuring out burnout, but what I have figured out is how to maybe stop my creative burnout from getting too extreme. So I have grace with myself to pause if I'm like, okay, I need to take a break. I'm okay with that. I know I can come back to things. And I think really allowing that space of play that, like in that newsletter I was talking about, I just need something that nobody else is looking at. It's not getting judged. I'm not trying to make money off of this. This is just literally for fun, like when we were children. Like you made drawings all the time and nobody ever saw them except for your mom and they hung on the fridge and then they went in the trash 2 weeks later. Like, and that's okay. And so yeah. I think we just have gotten to a point in society where now everything you do has to be a side hustle or has to be commoditized, or like we've lost the art of a hobby for hobby's sake. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to reclaim that, and I'm trying to be really intentional with, yes, building my public persona and posting online, but I know that I don't need to post everything about myself, and including like the drawings that I do at night. Like, I could easily be posting those and then saying like, yeah, I'll do commission work now, like, but I'm like, I know this is just a moment to be with my son at the dining room table, listening to audiobooks, coloring, and he's messing up my drawing, and I'm okay with it.
It's a sacred space.
Yeah, and it does not need to be anything fancy. It just needs to be a time for your brain to take a break.
Yeah, I love what you said there about reclaiming. I think that's really important, and I think another unlock that you've said, and maybe I've heard it somewhere else, is like rest is productive. So that reframing it that way, and that you are being productive and that you're giving yourself the rest that you need so that you can show up 100% as a business owner, as a friend and a mother and a wife and sister and all those things. So I think that's really good nuggets of advice.
I'm going to probably listen to this podcast and be like, Naomi, listen to your own damn advice.
Yes. You know what? Yes. When you're having a bad day, just turn that on and be like, yes, we need a hype moment. Let's listen to that episode. There's already so many great little nuggets that I can't wait to pull out of this from. But I'm curious. So what does the future look like for Nuevo? What is that pie in the sky vision that you'd like to see? You mentioned that you're already 6 years in, which congratulations. What is the next step for Nuevo?
That's a really great question. I've actually been ruminating on that these last few months. So I have an operations manager, Peely, and she's my best friend. And we've actually were friends before we worked together, and we somehow make it work. But we've been friends for, 15 years at this point.
Wow.
And she's like, I want to run a larger agency. So she's thinking like 15, 20 people. And honestly, just thinking of that many people freaks me out. Mm. So I've been really doing a lot of thinking on that. So I see Nova Studio staying boutique. Maybe a few more people grow, but really staying in our lane of branding and strategy. Mm-hmm. But really my next challenge is figuring out how to bring that strategic magic in a more remote setting. So right now those strategic sessions happen in person, or finding the clients that will like fly me out and we can do them in person. That's fine too. But next year, my husband is turning 40, and for his 40th birthday, we are going to Japan and Southeast Asia, and we're going there for six months.
That sounds so amazing.
So I need to figure out how do we continue the progress of Nuevo Studio and the strategic sessions, but in a way that I can be based in Thailand and Vietnam and Bali for 6 months at a time with a 16-hour time difference.
You'll be living in the future.
I will. And then, that's the first hurdle. The second hurdle, which I think is a smaller hurdle after that, is when my son turns six, we're going to be moving back to Mexico. So how are we going to build a sustainable company that can thrive really internationally, but stay boutique? That's really the next big jump for us. So that's a interesting conundrum. If anybody has any ideas, please feel free to reach out.
Yes. I love that. I'm curious where, so for the people that are listening that want to follow along on Nuevo and your personal journeys, where should they go to find you?
So I'm most active on LinkedIn.
Okay.
So you can find me there, Naomi Cernazon, and then just follow the pink ring. And love then that. If you are more active on Instagram, that's very normal. I'm on there too. I'm just not as active as I am on LinkedIn. If you want to hear more of the stories and things like that, LinkedIn is the spot. And if you really want to get that little weekly burst of energy or brand or inspiration or business inspo, then join my newsletter.
Awesome. And I'll be sure to link that in the show notes so everyone can get to it. But for real, definitely anyone listening, follow her on LinkedIn and Nuevo. There's tons of really interesting and beneficial content, but you've done such a good job of leveraging LinkedIn as a good platform to share more about clarity and brand strategy, because every now and then these days, these cycles come through where suddenly everyone can do brand strategy. So I think you do a really good job of aligning expectations of what that actually is and what someone should be looking for when they're seeking out that type of service. So definitely look at it. You had some posts kind of like go viral, right? About the tip of the iceberg one. Is that one that went viral?
Yeah, the branding iceberg. Yeah, so typically just people think when they say branding, they think it's the logo and the colors associated. But really your logo is just the vessel of what your brand is. And your brand is the thing that lives in people's minds about you. So you can't really change that. Like, unless you're a mind changer, like, then also call me. But you can't really do that. So the way that you can persuade people to think of you in a certain way is through a visual identity, through your brand messaging. And you can't really figure that out if you don't know who you are, why are you doing what you're doing, and like, aside from the money, why are you really doing this? Because you could probably go get a job that's a little bit easier to do than this, the hustle of the business. Mm-hmm. How are you doing it? Like, how are you helping clients? What is the value you provide for them? All of that needs to be really aligned before you build the visual identity, which is what most people think of branding is. So, mm-hmm. When you have all of that figured out, who the audience is, what our core values are, what is our mission, why do we exist, then creating the visual identity is so much easier because you know exactly who you need to talk to. You know exactly what needs to be said. So I see this all the time in business mentorship groups. I have this thing and how can I make a big splash about my product? I'm like, okay, well, who's the ideal person? They're like, oh, just everybody. I'm like, I mean, I don't know how to make a big splash that everybody's excited about. So
yeah.
it's really hard to make marketing and business decisions if you don't know who you are, mm-hmm. who you're going after, like all of that, all of the things that you are having problems with your marketing and your business is because mm-hmm. you don't know who the heck you are, which means mm-hmm. you don't have a brand strategy. And therefore, if you don't have a brand strategy, your branding is actually just being made for you and you're not in control of it.
And that's a huge risk. I read a statistic, or my friend told me a statistic, that 90% of businesses don't make it to $1 million in like realized revenue. 90%. And I bet you those 90% do not have clear brand strategy.
No. And also I think there's another statistic that, I think it's like 60% of businesses make it to the 5-year mark.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but aside from revenue, just it's really hard to run a business and get up every day and continue it and have ideas and move it forward.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know why you're doing it, it's even harder.
I think you said it really well one day where you said, if you don't have that, you don't have your brand's DNA. Like, that's really important to have that DNA because that's a roadmap for everything else.
Yep. It's just, I don't know how to ingrain it into people even further that having just your core values and a logo is not having a brand. That's like having that's like having just like a sandal cover your toe.
That's funny. And I think that's maybe where some people go wrong is when they want to start a new business, they get super excited about, oh, I get to pick out a logo, like the fun parts of a business, where you kind of have to reverse that and let the strategy lead the logo, not the other way around. But yeah, this has been an amazing conversation, Naoma, and I love the little nuggets of knowledge that you've left us with the audience, and I'm excited to kind of see where Nuevo takes off next. But what is one piece of advice that you'd like to leave with the audience, that maybe something that you wish you knew early on in business, or something that you wish you would have told yourself a few years ago? What would that be?
I think this is something that I actually tell myself a lot, and I tell most of my friends a lot when they're scared about something. So it's two things. So when you're starting a business, and I know this is not a business podcast, but when you're doing something that's really scary, going out and speaking in public or going and interviewing for a job or whatever that may be, nobody's thinking about you as much as you are thinking about you.
Boom.
That has just always been so freeing to me, that when I walk into a room, people are more worried about themselves than they're worried about you. And that has just always helped me, like, just release a lot of that anxiety or fear I have. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I would leave is, and this is, again, based on facing your fears. If you've had something on your mind of you want to go do something, I've always kind of kept to this motto of, this is just a second of your life on the long-term spectrum of, like, if you have like that flashback at the end of your life, this decision is probably really just a little second of that whole montage. And it's better to have the fear than to have the regret.
Ooh, I like that a lot. That's a good mic drop moment. It's better to have the fear than the regret. Absolutely. Plus one to that. And I think that's something that people may be grappling with or need to hear right now in order to make that decision of what's next. Do I start that business? Do I go do a brand strategy? You name it. But I think that's a good note to end on. I appreciate you coming on the show, Naoma. I'd love to do a part two sometime. But thank you for sharing your experience, your lived experience, some of your really amazing expertise, and thank you for just sharing your energy with everyone and your talents. So I hope to see you again soon, and thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.